Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 4th. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today. Joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. So if you have a question about copyright law, intellectual property, fair use, what's in the public domain, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Feel free to email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright calls, they're coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and our great panel is back to answer your questions. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and galleries. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He's a frequent lecturer on intellectual property issues. And, you know, this is the dream team, people. If you have any intellectual property at all, we have you covered. 800-348-2551. And, frankly, I just heard Paul Rapp's hourly. So, listen, you better call if you want some free advice. 800-348-2551. How you doing, people?
Great.
Hanging in.
Yeah, everybody's feeling good? Feeling great? Polly, you look like you're pretty happy. Everything going good for you?
Everything's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. By the premise, by the gag. Bill Westwood, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
Well, that's good. It's good to have you here. Paul Rapp, what is happening, sir?
I could complain, but what good would it do, you know?
We have I'm just 50 minutes
enjoying the
kill.
Change of seasons.
Are you really?
No.
No.
I was going to say, what happened to you?
I was out on the roof taking the air a little while ago, and it's a little nippy out there, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got unused to having winter.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's going to snow tomorrow, so it'll be fun. And depending on where you are, it could be between a dusting to 10 inches. So it's pretty exciting. So, Bill Westwood, you sent this a while ago, which I forgot to print. And then you printed it for me anyway. This is from Mickey Blog. What's Mickey Blog, by the way?
It's a
Disney thing?
Disney thing.
Really?
Yeah, it's a Disney blog.
But it's not based at Disney. It's someone else writing about Disney?
I don't think so.
Really?
I think it's Disney. Yeah.
Okay.
I was in a bit of a hurry, and I didn't look carefully at the origins of this when I printed it out. But it was such an interesting story that I wanted to share it with everybody.
Well, I'll read just a little of the first paragraph, and the title is 7-year-old Loki Skywalker Mowbray was denied a passport because his middle name infringed on Disney's copyright. A British family was denied a passport for their 7-year-old son on the grounds that his middle name, Skywalker, constituted copyright infringement. Christian Mowbray, a soldier serving in the Corps of Royal Engineers, and his wife, Becky, a former soldier, had booked a vacation to the Dominican Republic at the end of October. The family says it was their first trip. And according to a report from Suffolk News, the family tried to secure a passport for their son, Laurie Skywalker Mowbray. The passport was refused due to copyright issues, and the Home Office instructed the family to either change Loki's middle name or seek permission from Disney. What is going on?
It's nonsense. And
yeah.
First of all, it's not a copyright issue. It's a trademark issue, and you can't trademark a common name. And as Polly did some research on this just now.
The first recorded use of the word of the name Skywalker was in 1856.
Ooh.
It's a Native American designation.
What's your hourly?
Well, also the Mohawk iron workers who worked on the Empire State Building and stuff, they are called Skywalkers.
Oh, interesting. So where does this go then?
I think they changed their mind.
Yeah, well,
they gave him his passport.
Once this came out, the British government backed down and granted him the passport.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I got to say, the British government has no business policing Disney's intellectual property.
For them.
Disney is obnoxious enough with that itself.
Well, Disney apparently, you know, they weren't the ones who They were on the sidelines.
Yeah.
For once.
Well, this is good news for me because my son's middle name is Darth Vader. So I'm looking forward to traveling abroad. Well, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but I do want to bring it up. This just hit the wires last week. A coalition of Canadian news publishers, including the Canadian Press, Globe, Mail, et cetera, have filed a lawsuit against OpenAI, as Polly said before the show, get in line, for using news content to train its ChatGPT generative artificial intelligence system. The outlet said in a joint statement on Friday, that was the end of November, that OpenAI is regularly breaching copyright by scraping large amounts of content from Canadian media. Paul, you've addressed this 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
Do it one more time.
At least 900.
You know, I don't know if there's a wrinkle in Canadian law that will allow this, but in the U.S., these cases are getting thrown out on a weekly basis because it's not copyright infringement to learn from somebody else's stuff. That's how people learn, and that's how AI learns. So it's not. It could be something else, but I don't think it's copyright infringement.
Go ahead, Bill.
The case that the New York Times and those other publishers are pushing is actually moving forward.
Okay.
I made a copy of the thing and then left it in the studio.
You're as bad as I am.
I'm worse. Trust me. they're moving forward. Also, the lawsuit involving the voiceover folks, that one is also moving forward.
And what was that one again?
You have to put me on the spot, don't you? A number of voiceover artists, the ChatGPT stuff, the AI stuff, was imitating certain actors and actresses' voices and using those in commercials.
That's not a copyright issue so much as a right of personality and a right of publicity.
But that one is moving forward as well.
Oh, I read last week the Cleveland punk band, the Dead Boys, had the song Sonic Reducer. Their lead singer, Steve Baters, died in Paris decades ago. But they've gotten together with a new singer and have been out touring. And they got a record deal, and the record company told the singer he's not going to sing because they're going to use AI-generated Steve Baters vocals. And the kid quit. The kid just said, I'm no.
And the band is okay with that?
I'm the singer. And apparently the band is okay with it.
Because it's cha-ching, basically. that's so interesting.
So that's what we got to look forward to.
Speaking of Loki Skywalker Mowbray, here's another one. Federal judge orders Oakland Airport to stop using San Francisco in its name. That's a new lawsuit. I don't know if you saw this one. It was from mid-November. Federal judge has ordered the Port of Oakland to stop using San Francisco Bay Oakland International Airport as its airport's name, while a lawsuit by the city of San Francisco over copyright infringement is ongoing. San Francisco sued over what it says is a trademark violation. It asked the federal judge to issue an injunction, a preliminary one, saying Oakland's airport new name is confusing people who want to fly to San Francisco International Airport. Give me a break.
I started reading this. And I was like on the second line, and I'm going, oh, give me a break. And about 10 seconds later, Polly's like, oh, my God, give me a break.
Yeah.
And then I kept reading, and I realized the judge is right.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
There's already San Francisco Airport.
San Francisco International Airport. And these guys decided to call themselves San Francisco Bay Oakland International Airport.
It's a different name. It's a city.
It's
a different name.
It's not different enough.
And it's confusing. And the Oakland people are saying, oh, well, we're closer to San Francisco. Well, that doesn't give you intellectual property rights.
Yeah, work it out with your travel agent.
So then, therefore, the New York Yankees could sue the Mets because they're the New York Mets?
No. The airport, the mark as a whole is going to be confusingly similar.
Case dismissed.
And so...
So this I knocked the computer out.
So, yeah, this ruling, I mean, this ruling makes sense to me.
That, okay.
Because trademark is all about the likelihood of confusion.
It's doing business as.
You know what, panel? Now we have discerned that Paul Rapp is a tool of the establishment.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
That's right. I'm a mole.
After all these years. Well, the number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Mike writes in from Saratoga. I'm curious, what is the shortest amount of text you could copyright? Can it be a sentence, a paragraph? Does it have to be longer? Can I publish a one-sentence novel and have it copyrighted? And that's from Mike.
Well, I mean, Ernest Hemingway published a story that was like two lines.
Oh, really?
For sale, unused baby shoes.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's...
I mean,
the Copyright Office is probably going to say that's too brief. It's not long enough.
You can't copyright names or short phrases according to their instructions. So... You know, the answer to the caller's question is
you'd have to submit it.
You'd submit it and see what they said.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends how unique the statement is. If it's random, if it's, but you know, short phrases and single words and even sentences. I had a student years ago do a whole thing on minimalism in art and the issues it raises. You know, because you have art with like one line on it.
Right.
And how can you protect that? And the Copyright Act doesn't really provide for an easy answer.
You know, I recall going to the years ago, going to the South Mall or the whatever they call it in Albany here, the downtown. And they have some odd art. And I remember going through and seeing just a huge, probably 4 feet by 5 feet, just red, just one color. I mean, how would that be a thing? How could you trademark or copyright that?
I don't get it either, frankly, but
it would be determined, I suspect, by the individuals that reviewed it, and is it?
I think I don't think enough, they would accept it.
Is there enough creativity? Because there has to be a modicum
and of uniqueness
creativity and uniqueness in order to copyright it.
Was the name of the work Big Paint Chip?
Yeah. No, I don't know what it was, but yeah,
it's an interesting question, though. I'm going to go home and paint something and submit it and see what happens.
So, I mean, the Philip Glass 433. There's no...
John Cage.
John Cage, I'm sorry. There's no music. It's just sound. I mean, it's just the sound of the audience. I mean, how can you copyright that?
A few years ago, John Cage's estate sued somebody for infringement I don't know what happened to that.
Performing it without paying them
performing
the royalty.
Mm-hmm. Hang on, everybody just be quiet for a minute. Infringement. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum. We have just begun. It's exciting stuff when you talk intellectual property with this group, and that is just what we'll do. We'll go to the phones in a moment. Christian McBride, a lovely version of the Steely Dan classic Asia here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum with Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. We begin in Sheffield, Mass. Larry, you're on.
Hi. I'm getting ready to do a children's book, mostly photos that I took. What do I do and how do I do it in terms of copyright?
As soon as you create the photos, they're copyrighted. What you need to do is, is this going to be just a collection of the photos? Will there be writing? What are you planning?
No, there'll be writing. Each photo will have some writing.
What would you do, Paul?
I would probably do the whole book.
Would you? I was going to say,
since
they're
photos,
you could register up to 750 photos at a time.
Put them together as a collection.
Right. Register those with the Copyright Office, www.copyright.gov. And
And then you could, I mean, you could do the book as a whole also.
Well, you could.
Probably.
Wouldn't you get more protection if you did the...
The individual, yeah. If it was a book as a whole, somebody could do three infringements and it would be considered one.
Right.
Because it's the book is one work. So if you do a collection of photographs and somebody steals three of them, it would be considered three infringements. So
right.
750 pictures can be in a group.
Photographs.
That you can then do for one fee.
Unpublished.
Yes.
No, you can do for one fee.
Why is it unpublished? Why does it have to be unpublished?
I don't know their reasoning historically for that, but it's the same. It's true of artwork and illustrations as well.
The numbers aren't as high.
Oh, no. We can only do 10 at a time.
Interesting. So when Larry publishes it, though, then it gets back to what Paul was saying. Does he have to copyright the whole book?
Does he have to register the whole book? When he writes it, it's copyrighted.
Yeah. But he should register the whole book.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, There's only about a dozen photos.
That makes it even easier.
Yeah. But you could also, at the same time, register a whole bunch of other photos that you have sitting around. Just to cover them, it's not going to cost you any more money. So you could do the 12 in your book and then, you know, 150 more that you've already done on other subjects.
Mm-hmm. If you have those.
If you have them.
Okay.
So just get in touch with copyright.com.
.gov.
.gov. Yep.
Copyright. Oh, .gov. Yeah, Google copyright.gov and you'll get to the site. And
then you try to figure it out.
Follow the prompts.
Yeah. Well, they okay. have some tutorials.
Great. Yeah, it's a little better now. Larry, thanks a lot for that one. Nick wants to know, how long do royalties last on something like a coffee cup lid?
That's a patent, I think.
Yeah, okay. And that would be 20 years.
20 years, yeah. And that's it. Then everyone can copy the...
If you got a patent on your coffee cup lid, which... Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. You know. All right, fine. Let's go to Saratoga. It's Vincent. Hello, Vincent. Huh. Goodbye, Vincent. Vincent, I think, is... Well, he'll try it again, I'm sure. Let's go to Bill in Salisbury. Bill, you're on.
Hi. Leave it to you guys to have such a great subject in a timely manner. Don't expect to hear such wonderful from.
Well, thank you.
My question involves some 1926 negatives of a polar expedition that I think of in by Admiral Byrd and Josephine Ford, Robert Byrd, or Admiral Byrd expedition. There was some controversy over the actual placement of the pole, and there was a bit of a race on between a German team with a Zeppelin and a Fokker tri-motor aircraft with the Ford team. And I have these negatives, which are large formats. They appear to have never been published, although they are like canvas. They show the photographer, the official photographer, and other people, but they're like behind the scenes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And very interesting.
Okay.
And I want to give them to a university. And I want to make sure that they can publish them.
1926 is...
Except these are unpublished. So you'd have to... It would probably be... Was it an American photographer?
Can't find his name anywhere.
Could you
now,
find...
This is also... I've been trying to work with the Henry Ford Museum, who has an exposition on this, but they're difficult to reach.
Yeah, so it's probably going to be keyed on... when the photographer died, if you can figure out who the photographer
is. Okay.
But I think you can, you know, like if it had been published in 1926, it would be in the public domain now. And I think you're reasonably safe to assume it's going to, that these, even though they're unpublished, will be in the public domain as well.
All right. That's cool.
Okay. That's the main thing. Yeah. Well, watch for them. You never know. Someone might be interested in. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bill. Appreciate it. It's the Copyright Forum today. Bill Westwood is here. Polly Law and Paul Rapp. Remember when Vincent was on the line and Vincent left us right when I went to him? I think Vincent's back.
Vincent's back.
Hello, Vincent. How you doing?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us?
Good, I can hear you too.
Splendid.
So, I got a question. I'm writing a novel. I've been doing it for about 10 years, and I finally got to the point that I could submit it to an agent. I've tried to keep it off of the internet, but I am concerned as I start putting it out there about it being pirated.
Just register it, Vincent.
Yeah,
register with the copyright office. It's already copyrighted since you create it. So register it with the copyright office, and then if somebody pirates it, you can happily chase them all the way to the bank.
Yeah, and it, you know, it could happen. But my, you know, my statement on this is, you know, if you put something up on the internet, don't be concerned that people are going to steal it. I'd be more concerned that they won't.
Yeah.
And that's good advice. Yes, it's and the advice you get online and in some of these books is very contradictory. You know, some of them say if telling the agent that this is copyrighted doesn't get you any bonus.
No.
And generally you're protected. And that's the more I hear that I'm protected, the more nervous I get.
You're only protected if you're registered.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, agents and printers and publishing companies don't become agents and printers and publishing companies by stealing people's stuff, you know? So.
Oh, no. I'm worried about if I put it out. I'm in a group of critics, and we critique each other's work. It's very organized, and they do say we can't promise you that you can't be harmed, and I guess they can't. They can't promise that, but generally speaking, they're saying don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
I think your original answer was great. You know, I really would rather have somebody take notice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Vincent, good luck, and we appreciate that you gave us a call today. 800-348-2551 if you would like to be like Vincent and give us a call. Let's go to Red Hook. Jasmine, you're on.
Hi. I am so thrilled to be on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I have an LLC in New York, and it is the name of the corporation.
All right. Try it again, Jasmine. Your cell phone's a little spotty. Try that again. You have an LLC in New York, and then we lost you. So try it again. Hello?
It's the same as a town in California. A town in California.
Okay.
And then in California, there's another business. With a different spelling that has like a similar use case to mine. They're going to trademark. Should I rush to trademark, or am I good since I live in New York?
Are you on the internet, or are you a locally based business?
Good question. I'm a locally based business. I don't sell on the internet.
Okay. So, I wouldn't worry about a company with a similar name in California.
You said it's spelled differently?
Yeah, it's spelled differently.
Well, but wouldn't it be better, Paul, to check on the trademark of that other company? If this other company happened to be named Disney, they're going to come after you.
Well, the other company in California has to be doing business, you know, meaningful business in New York. So
that's what I'm saying.
It's kind of nuanced, but a trademark, you get common law trademark rights by simply using a mark in commerce for the geographic area that you operate in. So you already have common law rights in the geographic area you operate in. If you're on the internet and doing business in all 50 states, then your geographic area is all 50 states.
What about the other company if it's doing business on the internet?
I think you'd want to check and see what the other company is doing and where.
Yeah, do some research.
Yeah. If they're a totally local company in California, you have nothing to worry about. If they're on the internet but they're not very big, you still probably don't have anything to worry about.
But I think that the spelling difference might save her also.
No,
sound is the key.
Yeah, are covered.
Okay.
So, if you wanted it, you could get a New York State trademark, which is simple and cheap for $50, and it'll protect you in the state of New York.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jasmine, good luck. Appreciate it very much. You know, there was an old band from the 90s, Dada, and they had a song, I'm Going to Disneyland, but they spelled it D-I-Z-Z-K-N-E-E. Did they do it for that reason, so that Disney did not sue them?
I don't think so. That's not a trademark use. They couldn't get sued for that by saying they're going to Disneyland.
Yeah. No.
Even though they pay football players to say it. Okay. Yeah, that's not a trademark use, so it's not infringement.
All right, let's grab one more call before the next break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's see, we'll go to Mechanicville. Larry, you're on.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yep.
Excellent. My question is about compulsory mechanical licensing.
Mm-hmm.
I make ringtones. I usually license things through Harry Fox, but sometimes things aren't licensable through Harry Fox, and you have to try to go to the publisher directly.
Right.
Which is a struggle because they never respond to you. I had been told that if you write out a letter and send it through registered mail with your intent to enact a compulsory mechanical license, and you request information about where do I send the quarterly payments, you cover yourself from being sued. I was wondering what your opinion on this is, and you know, would that protect me?
Okay.
You know, I've been using a site called EasySongLicensing.com. And I'm sure there's...
I use that for one thing as well, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's other sites that do the same thing. But they kind of take, you know, out of, especially compulsory licenses, you know, they will get them for you. You just tell them what the song is and who the publisher is. And, you know, they will tell you, you know, what to pay. And that's the route I go, because otherwise, you know, otherwise you're just, you know, digging a hole. And... that you might not be able to get out of. You know, you might not get a resolution by writing a letter.
I was hoping to avoid that $30 per piece fee that they charge.
But it's yeah. for
that's the safe way, bro.
Yeah, for me it's worth it for me and my clients, and I use them regularly.
But isn't this writing the letter similar to what we run into with people trying to copyright things? The poor man's copyright, isn't that similar?
No, he's writing to the publisher to issue a license.
I understand, but all the publisher would have to say is, "I never received it."
Yeah. Oh, you sent it to the wrong address by mistake.
But it's a compulsory license; they have to grant it. But I would go. You know, I would use the service.
Use the service. Okay. Well, Larry, good luck with that. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. All right, we'll do one more email, then we'll take a break, then we'll go back to the phones. This is from, I don't know who it's from, screenplay copyright. I have an idea, only a concept, for a very unique and creative movie screenplay. If I do write it down, can I protect myself from the people that'll try to steal my idea? Is a one-page description of my screenplay sufficient to prove this was my idea in 2024? How do I prove my idea came in 2024?
You do a treatment of the screenplay, and then you register it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that gives you some protection.
And the Authors Guild, the West Coast Authors Guild, accepts treatments, I'm not sure how it works. I've never done it, but check out the West Coast Author Guild, because they formally accept treatments as treatments, and then, you know, if somebody steals the story, that's by copying the treatment.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happens then.
But I think the key in terms of proof is that registration.
Well, but what Paul I think is saying is that if the Screenwriters Guild on the West Coast accepts it, that is a time marker also.
A time marker, sure.
I understand. Being the guy I am, I would not trust that.
No.
Unless I knew some of those people personally.
But I think the more pertinent issue here, too, is that you can't just have an idea. You
Correct.
Do have to do a treatment. You have to expand on it. and make some concrete images, actions, dialogue, character lists, something to flesh it out. It cannot just be a vague idea.
Yeah, and keep in mind that when you create that, it is copyrighted. What you're doing when you go to the copyright office is you register that copyright.
So screenplays, what if you did a screenplay of something in the public domain? And it's virtually the same. You know, you did a treatment of Shakespeare, Much Ado About Nothing. You can copyright that? That seems like a real scam.
No, probably not.
No, because it's in the public domain.
But is the screenplay?
But if you did a screenplay, your selection of you know, what you use and how you, you know, you would get some protection.
Well, yeah,
unless you were doing a literal copying of, of Shakespeare.
Kenneth Branagh did a version of Much Ado About Nothing
that
was set in Tuscany in the 1850s.
Yeah.
You know, which is different from where Shakespeare said it.
Yeah.
So that part of it would be copyrightable.
So if I said it in, say, Rensselaer.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. All right, let's do that. 800-348-2551. Okay, it's the Copyright Forum, and the home stretch is straight ahead. We have Pauly Long, we have Bill Westwood, we have Paul Rapp, and a little more T-Bone Walker for you. It's a mean old world. T-Bone Walker here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. You want to call in the Copyright Forum. Pauly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. Just to follow up on the screenplay, this email from Ken. What constitutes a treatment of an, I assume, already written out screenplay? What needs to be added?
Google is your friend.
Yeah.
Okay, so we don't know.
Usually you do a treatment first, you know, and then you write the screenplay. If you write the screenplay, you really don't need a treatment. You know,
okay.
It's redundant.
All right. Let's see. We'll go now to Worthington, Massachusetts. Jack, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, I just had a quick question. I'm in a possible process of selling a company that I have, and I have a product that has a patent on it, and I have a registered trademark for the name. When I sell this company, how do I transfer all that, and or do I have to, or can I just give them the right to use it?
Well, you can license the patent. I don't know about the trademark, Paul. What's the?
I think that's part of the goods of the company.
Yeah, I mean, you could sell the whole thing and let their lawyers, you know, let their lawyers do the transfers. But yeah, you can transfer a patent, you can license a patent, and retain the ownership of the patent. A trademark you really can't license. I think you'd have to sell that and the goodwill to the good.
Yeah, that would be part of the goodwill.
Yeah,
I was just curious about the patent too, because it was my younger brother who did it back in the 90s. I'm not even sure the patent is very protective at this point, but I could just license them to have it, even if I didn't have to take remuneration.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of ways to. Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to do it, and they'll have an idea of how they want it done. If you do sell it outright, I think I would ask for an ongoing royalty downstream, so you keep the income coming in.
Yeah, we've been working on that idea. We'll see when the lawyers finally get involved.
Well, thanks, Jack. Right. Appreciate the call. Now to Saratoga. Tim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to call in.
Sure.
I'm associated with a nonprofit organization, and we grabbed a picture from the internet and put it on our website. And we've subsequently received a letter from a California law firm asking for remuneration payment.
Does the name Higbee sound familiar?
Say it again,
yes,
Paul.
Yes, it sure does.
Yeah.
I see it all over the internet, and they're still bugging us, even though we removed the picture months ago, and they're still asking for payment.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to resolve this amicably, but I don't know what else to do.
I would recommend ignoring them. They stomp their feet and they threaten. But they're not going to come to Saratoga and sue a nonprofit over one photograph. I mean, these guys are trolls, and they like low-hanging fruit. So they send out these threatening letters, and if one out of 10 gets them some money, they'll drop the other nine. And so I wouldn't worry about it. I would just ignore them. I wouldn't engage them. It sounds like you've already talked to them a little bit. I wouldn't engage them.
They continue to call.
On the other hand, if they file a complaint, then you're going to have to hire an attorney and defend yourself.
Yeah. But they have a history of not doing that. No, I mean, they go after, like, big guys. I mean,
no,
if there's somebody who, you know, doesn't take it down and they're obviously a big company, they might.
Right. But just so you understand, you know, taking an image off the internet and using it is a
infringement.
Copyright infringement. I've personally sued 27 companies for doing that with my work. And, you know, hopefully the photographer in this case doesn't go to somebody else. But, you know, there are a number of these copyright trolls out there, the firms, that will do what Paul is saying. But I do think if you get an actual complaint, then you're going to have to pay attention.
So a complaint is different than just a letter?
Yes. A complaint is when they file the case in a federal...
It's the initiation of a lawsuit.
Federal court.
You know, in order to do a complaint, they would have to hire an attorney in the Northern District of New York to be their local counsel. Then they'll have to file a complaint. Then they'll have to pay the filing fee, which is like $500, which is probably about what they're asking you to pay for a license. Now, granted, they do this with registered copyrights, so hypothetically... You could be responsible for their attorney's fees. But, you know, this law firm has a horrible reputation. They've been slammed down numerous times in various courts.
But they're in the right here, though, right? I mean,
yes.
Technically.
Is it possible that they have not even been retained by the photographer owns the image, that they're just...
The photographer or a stock company that is,
Okay.
But, you know, I get these once a week, once every 2 weeks. And for years, I've been telling people to ignore them. And nobody's come back to me and said, hey, I got sued. You know, most of my clients are small businesses or nonprofits or individuals, and they're just not going to come after you.
Well, I hope you keep that streak going. Otherwise, you're going to get sued from this. So be careful. Tim, thanks a lot
for
the call.
Thank you.
Good luck. 800-348-2551. Ken is in Albany. Ken, you're on.
Hello. Hi there. I have a couple of questions regarding big companies throwing their big weight around against a private interest. I heard several years ago there was a hotel, an old hotel, somewhere in Pennsylvania called the Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn, the big corporation, wanted to build one within 50 miles, which is apparently within the statute of geographical limitations of naming something after something that's already there in Pennsylvania. So what I heard was Holiday Inn, the corporation, needed to change the name of their inn to Billy Buds with a double D. Do you know anything about that? Is that apocryphal, or is that like a real thing that they were forced by a probably an old hotel owner to change the name of their Holiday Inn?
It sounds plausible to me if the old hotel was in existence before the Holiday Inn chain. Came into existence, right. they would have superior rights. They would have prominence. I do.
Well, the chain was already in existence, but that particular in that location, no, that was new.
I don't think we're qualified to answer this.
Yeah, I'd have to know more facts because the Holiday Inn is kind of ubiquitous. So I'm surprised they would change it. There was a small seafood shack down on the Connecticut coast called Red Lobster.
Yeah.
And then the Red Lobster chain, you know, came into being. And in time, the guy sold.
Wasn't there a restaurant in Colony that had a similar thing off of Wolf Road? I can't remember the name of it.
No, that's a legitimate Red Lobster outlet.
No, I'm not talking about the Red Lobster on Wolf Road.
But the guy with the shack got enough money to retire on.
Oh, okay.
From the Red Lobster Corporation.
It's a lot of lobster.
Because he was there first.
All right, Ken, thanks a lot. And I think the real news there is that there is somewhere a hotel named Billy Bud's. Where are you going on vacation? Going to Billy Bud's. All right, Bill in Rosendale. Bill, you're on.
Hey, hi, guys. I think my question was answered two calls ago. But
oh, thanks for holding.
I'm the artistic director of a nonprofit, and I wanted to do an educational series, and I guess my nonprofit status does not offer any protection for using clips of videos.
No.
Even educational. I mean, could he use the
fair use? I'd have to see how it's used, but probably not.
I think you would be letting your company, your organization, in for a bucket full of trouble.
Yeah. But I could use, what about things that are informally put on YouTube, like from other countries?
If you're using work that
you didn't make,
or that you're not paying a license for, you are more than likely infringing somebody's work. And those infringements can come with some severe penalties in the U.S. especially.
If you do it to Bill Westwood, it certainly will. All
right, Bill. Okay, I'll be good.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it very much. All right. Generally speaking, when Bill Westwood answers a question on the show, it's usually no. That's usually the answer. Let's go to Hartford, Connecticut.
That's interesting.
Barry, you're on. Hello, Barry. There. Go ahead.
I have a strange question. I've been a musician for a long time, and I have written several books that have not been published on musical techniques and things like that. And what I never hear is anybody explain. And I'm a poor person, so when I understand of protecting a piece of work. I never hear anybody say, well, how do you go about to sue a person? And where do how much does it cost to sue a bigger company like Warner Brothers if you're just a little person with no money? And I never hear anybody talk about anything like that. And I don't know when to make the decision. Well, I should sue these people. That type thing.
Well, first thing you want to do is you say these books have never been published. Have they been registered with the Copyright Office?
No. Okay. None of it has been. I'm just trying to figure out my next move.
Okay,
and to understand the system a little bit.
Okay,
better.
So let me explain a little bit. If you register the book, then if somebody infringes your copyright, then you contact a copyright attorney. With due respect to my partner here, you find somebody that will do it on a contingency basis, and then for a very small amount of money, you can sue a big company.
All right.
However, if you do not register the work and someone infringes on it,
then
someone like my colleague will say, sorry, I can't help you because you can't afford my fee, because you would be liable for your own defense against this big company if you have not registered the work.
And truthfully, if it's a slam dunk infringement and you're registered first, you'll find a lawyer to take it on, because there will be a payday at the end of the road. And if you're suing a huge company and it's a slam dunk, they're going to settle really fast.
It'll never get to the net later stages.
Out of my 27 cases, all 27 have settled.
Because I wouldn't want to mess with you, man. I mean,
you stay away.
Believe me, the next time I draw a picture of a liver, I'm not. Listen.
Well, how does it work? What is the average? I mean, yeah, as lawyers, do would you say 20% of the people win, or 20, 80%?
It depends on whether you're registered and what the evidence is. It's a moving target.
So, again, Paul, if you're registered and this thing goes the distance and goes to trial and you win, under the Copyright Act, the loser can pay the winner's attorney's fees in full.
Would a lawyer then, would a copyright attorney say, well, it's not registered, I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole?
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Barry, I think you might be out of luck there, but good luck, my friend. Go ahead.
He can still register it, it sounds like.
Oh, register it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Register that. Register.
But if somebody's stolen it, they've already registered it, right?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Again, these are generalities. You would always want a lot more information before you gave somebody an absolute answer.
Yeah, and today is not the day.
This is just advice. There's no hourly here. It's all good. Let's go to Kush in Catskill. This might be it. You got about a minute here. Go ahead.
Yes. My question is very simple. I have a manuscript. It's large. Let's say 400 pages. Where would be the nearest copyright office that I could register this manuscript in? And I would prefer, like, actually giving them a physical document, manuscript.
I don't think they'll accept it.
They prefer electronic filings these days because it's easier and they don't want to have...
So it could be electronic filing, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Copyright.
So where am I sent?
Copyright.gov.
Do you have to make a PDF out of the thing? Or
yeah.
What do you,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go to www.copyright.gov and follow the prompts, as Ray said.
And then how much is a registration of a manuscript then?
For one author and one work, it would be $45.
Yeah, I was going to say $45.
There you go.
So I could be sending a digital file that is, even if it's broken up into parts.
Yeah, when you do the application, they ask you to submit the work. And you can send it. I did a book a few weeks ago that the client sent to me in chapters, and so I just put all the chapters in a row and put them in.
Yeah, and look, I've found that if you have questions, the Copyright Office is actually very good about answering those questions, and I have actually been pretty successful in reaching them by phone. I try the middle of the week. Mondays and Fridays tend to be really busy. But if you have a question going through this, I wouldn't hesitate to call until I reach somebody.
Okay, we got to leave it there. Polly Law, how do people find your works and what you're up to?
My work, you go to Instagram, and my handle on Instagram is artwordst, as in a cup of tea.
Cup of tea. Bill Westwood, if people want to draw the kidneys, how do they get in touch with you, brother?
Westwoodmedical.com.
Okay, Paul Rapp, if people want to talk to you, how do they do it?
My email is paul@paulrapp.com. My website is paulrapp.com.
Hey, thanks, everybody. I appreciate you coming in today. This was fun. Support comes from Whitney's Farm Market on Garden Center, Cheshire, for pies, North Mountain turnip, side dishes, gift baskets, and gift cards for the Thanksgiving holiday. Whitney'sFarm.com for information. Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design with cabinets from Wellborn and Marilat and quartz countertops from Cambria. American-made products sold locally, curtislumber.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. Hike lakegeorge.org. Thanks again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being with us today. They'll be back in 2025, and we'll do it all again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. Thank you, Andrea. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Real Estate Advice with Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello. They were bumped last time because of the fund drive, and they're champing at the bit. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.